Amin and I start this podcast talking about freedom and how different people experience it in different parts of the world, and it's a thoroughly interesting point to consider. What do you think freedom is, and how do you exercise it? We talk about West Asia, or indeed the Middle East, as it is known from the European gaze, and how it is not the place so many people from outside of the area, or those unfamiliar with the history of it, believe it to be. We talk about integration and what Amin thinks about the whole issue, which is a very novel perspective and deserves further consideration. I thank Amin for his time and for the many chats off mic that we have had, exploring culture in Jordan and the area around it. This is Two on a Mic. Rise up and be curious.
Jepek kudwelo mabiro etu under mic. Dung parodit kod joke mawoy etu under mic. Seche tin sudbuta wawinji etu under mic. Wola wachokre wabed piny biwawinje erochako the moment ndi two and a mic podcast makende.
I'm very happy to say that I'm finally, because we've tried to get this episode on the road now for over a year, I think, I'm joined by a very good friend, Amin. Amin, how's it going?
All good, Zach. Happy to finally be here.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Because time just flies, because we've really wanted to have this chat for a long time, from both sides. And whenever we, it just never got going. And now today, finally, we've managed to get that. So I'm very, very pleased, because you've often talked about your journey, about your life, and that there have always been so many fascinating episodes that I've wanted to know so much more about, and hopefully today we'll get to the bottom of some of it.
Yeah, like I said, really happy to be here. You are such an amazing person, Zach. I mean, this is away from the podcast. Honestly, you are a very special person. You're not like the normal Zax, you are also a very fascinating story. Also, you've told me a bit about your family, but let's not delve into that right now. But it's also a fascinating story. I was telling my girlfriend about it yesterday.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah, you know that I don't pay any money for these. I'm joking. I appreciate your sentiments. Listen, very much.
Yeah. You already received my Bitcoin wallet before this podcast.
Excellent. Cool. So yeah. So let's start at the beginning then. Where were you born, and what was going on?
Yeah. So I was born in Jordan in a middle higher class family in there. So it was good. And I lived there the first 16, 17 years of my life, finished school there. And I lived in a community where, the minute you finish school, you think about going to university. And so most of my colleagues, usually the thing in Jordan is that you go mostly to UK. Some of us go to US, and the rest of the world, very few do get to go to. But UK was the usual scenario. So I ended up going to UK, study. I left UK when I was 17. And a year after that, some things happened. And with things, I mean, I lost my visa to UK. And I ended up, at the same time, my family was starting to move or thinking about moving from Jordan. And so they ended up moving to Latin America. So I went back to visit Jordan for a week. By the second week, my father asked me, "Hey, do you want to visit Latin America?" And so I did. So I went to Latin America. The plan was to stay there for 2-3 weeks and go back to finish complete my studies in the UK. But that never happened. I ended up staying in Latin America. And the reason I say Latin America is, again, there's many countries there. So at the time, it was Paraguay. And while I was staying there, the rest of the family was kind of moving in steps. So everyone was kind of finishing their whatever they had open in Jordan and then moving. So my father was there. And so I was living with my father and brother in Paraguay. And my father was like, it was at the time where Germany made their universities tuition free. So my father was like, apply to Germany and try it out. And so I applied to Germany and ended up moving to Berlin while I was 19. So a little recap summary, 0 to 17 Jordan, 17 to 18 in Nottingham, UK. 18 to 19 was Paraguay, Ciudad del Este, and then starting from 19, somewhere along 19, I moved to Berlin, which is where I resided for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and you got a degree in?
I ended up studying renewable energy in Berlin.
In English or in German?
In German, indeed. It was such a struggle, of course, at the beginning. Arriving here as a little kid, I still thought that, hey, my experience in Latin America and my experience in UK kind of prepared me for this, so I wasn't really scared. But still, Berlin was very different in all senses. It was a new language, it was a new culture, and being from an Arab origin, I never really cared about the rules, so respecting the rules was also it was a weird concept to me at the beginning.
That sounds decidedly rebellious, as in, but when you say you never really followed the rules, are we talking about like traffic lights? Are we talking cycling rules? What kind of rules are we talking about?
I would say just a broader definition. The rules was always like a suggestion. It was never like a rule. Just whether it's traffic lights, because that's also a thing I've done. I used to steal my father's car and go around, and when the police tried to stop me, well, I never stopped. That's why I'm here.
In Jordan, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And just so that people get a note that, okay, you weren't like doing some crazy shit in the streets of Berlin. This was in Jordan. Okay.
No, this was in Jordan. This was just like, how can I say? In Jordan, I just felt invincible. And I was a spoiled brat kid, was what you would say to people like me, because I kind of had the feeling that it doesn't matter what I do, I have people to pull me out of whatever trouble I create. Now, nothing crazy illegal, but like, I don't know, maybe driving a car while not having a license is considered as illegal, so I would say that.
Mm.
But it came from ignorance. It wasn't like me trying to make a point or statement or anything that benefits humanity. It was just utter stupidness. And I would say teenager times, it's quite usual to do some stupid things.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is something which I really enjoy talking about with you and also other people who have grown up in the Middle East in different countries. So my dad grew up in Beirut in Lebanon until the age of 26, 27. And some of the things that my dad tells me about that he did with his friends, I would never think about doing. Yeah. And I was born in London. I grew up in London. I've lived in Italy. I've lived now for the last 12 or 13 years in Germany. And so I have always felt myself to have lived a free life. But when I used to listen to some of the stuff that my dad did, I would think to myself, okay, so there was no law, you know, were there no police officers in your way? And obviously I've been to Beirut, so I know that there is a law. I know that there are police officers, but this concept of freedom is completely different. It's considered in a different way in some parts of the world than in others.
Definitely. I mean, I'm trying to think of good examples for this, but being maybe loud and expressing yourself and, for example, going to my nephew's graduation and shouting from the top of my lungs is probably annoying for the people around me. But in Jordan, it's still considered my freedom to support my nephew and like kind of show my presence there somehow. It could be considered in Germany as something that's maybe not respecting the other's private sphere and everything, but in Jordan it'll be like kind of cheering, and it belongs. It's culture at the end.
Yeah.
And when it comes to rules in the Middle East, rules are there, but they're more like a suggestion. Like this is the blueprint, you can follow it, but you can get also creative. I mean, it's not written anywhere, but that's how the people handle rules in general.
I'm trying to think of similar situations that may be the case also in Europe, for example, which I'm more familiar with than other countries. And I would imagine it's possible that this is also the case in these kinds of Western democracies, because what we've got, we definitely have a two-tier system. We've got a system where if you're rich, it doesn't matter. You probably, you know, you can buy your way out of problems. You've got, I don't know, police officers or police captains or lawyers or judges in your pocket and so on. I mean, I know when I was in Italy, there were like local newspapers. If something happened to me, my name would be all over the pages. Yeah. But if it happened to one of the prominent family's kids, at most you'd see their initials and nothing else, you know? And also in the UK, there are lots and lots of, I should say, crimes or misdemeanors or whatever. But the way you get out of it, if it's a fine, if you can pay a fine to remove yourself from any kind of liability, then that's not a crime for rich people because they can pay that off. But it's a crime for poor people because they can't pay that off. So I think there are similarities in the Western system. We're just not aware of it to what you're saying, because what you're saying is, yeah, you could do whatever you want, and more or less, there's a creative way out of it.
You're speaking about the times of the Middle East, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I would say this is universal. If you have money, then you can buy yourself out of trouble. I've heard this sentence from an English guy once. He was like, "If you go to Thailand, you can do whatever shit you want to do as long as you have cash." And it stayed with me. But in the Middle East, I would say this is more or less universal. This is the capitalist world where we live in, where at the end of the day, money rules. There are some rules here and there, but money overrules everything. And as sad as it is, it is how the world turns today. And
And I just want to say that it's similar also in the UK and in the other European nations that I know, because those who have money find a way to get themselves out of trouble.
Yeah. It's always like that. There's levels to this game. I mean, not this game, but I mean money in general. Some people seriously worry about daily food, and some people worry about jet fuel, and you know, each one in their own respective world, they're both complaining about something. But yeah, it's crazy how levels work and how
inequality.
Thank you.
I find it fascinating, because what it also points out, in as much as there are differences, of course there are differences between cultures, between traditions, between the ways of doing things from the Middle East, which I've also heard, I've read recently, being described as West Asia, which I think is fantastic. And there are the differences with the West, shall we say, in general, Europe and further afield. But there are also these intriguing similarities, the way the wealthy elites within society have always managed to find a way to bend circumstances to suit them, and that is universal no matter where you are.
You called the Middle East West Asia a second ago.
I read this just a few days ago. I read this from a woman, a young lady, who she's a political analyst from Beirut. And she said, the West calls this place the Middle East. We call it West Asia. And I thought that's fantastic.
That is fantastic, because the Middle East is the Middle East out of European perspective. But yep. And not if you check the geography and the maps of where the Middle East is actually located, because, and I was on the subject actually a while ago, how the Middle East is geographically very, I mean, if you look at the Middle East from Western glasses, all you can think of is probably, it's a war zone area with a lot of trouble, people there. And that's how the Middle East is usually portrayed. However, that place, not because I'm born there, but I see the discrepancy between the media that I get, for example, and the media that my Western girlfriend gets, which is totally different perspective. Sometimes we get the same video, but the comments that we have are just totally different.
Yeah.
And it's always always such an open discussion of, yeah, the Middle East. What is the Middle East? Well, it's first of all, the Middle East is not a place that is interested in war. War is imported there. We do not want war. No one in the Middle East wants war. It's logic. It just makes sense. Even, Yanni, to add to this, you have a place that's actually very culturally rich and religiously rich. Like you have a place that over thousands of years where humanity started, it is the connection between Africa and Asia. So it's actually, the thing is, the Middle East is a place for itself. We call it in Arabic, Shibh al-Jazir al-Arabi, which is something like an island look-alike, what we call it. It's because it's actually surrounded by water from three sides. Mm-hmm. And from the northern side, it's kind of connected by land, and it connects Africa to Asia, which is, once you go there, you'll see the culture, you see religion, you'll see the richness of culture. However, none of this is portrayed in the Western media. It's portrayed as, the terrorist place and I don't know what place. I think it's always, for the people who know, they know, but I think in general, it's not fair because it's a place with a lot of history and a lot of heritage and a lot of good stuff, just like any other place.
And perhaps a bit more than many places, because it has such a long history. There are many, many parts of the Western world that simply do not have written records that go back anywhere near as far as many of the cultures and cities in West Asia or the Middle East, as we know it.
Definitely. Not only that, anything that was discovered in the Middle East or by any Arab, maybe Muslim name, then it gets rebranded in the Western literature to something universal. So it's kind of the history. I think Europeans just don't know what actually came from the Middle East or from the Arab world or from the Muslim world. Like it's all also really hard to divide, because the Middle East is in generally Arab because they speak Arabic, but not all Muslim. In the Middle East, we also have a lot of Christians, especially in Jordan. There used to be also a big Jewish community. I mean, Palestine used to, like, everyone knows that Palestine is the birth of, not Palestine necessarily, but maybe Jerusalem is the birthplace of more or less all religions. You go to Jerusalem, you'd see a synagogue close to a mosque, close to a church, and they're all together kind of living in peace and harmony. And actually, one of the most, this is such a memorable thing that happened with me. One time I was in Sao Paulo, it was actually the first time I was in Sao Paulo, And we met a guy, and he was like nice. He heard us speaking Arabic, and he looked at us. We were cute. We spoke to him, and my brother was to ask him like, "What's your name?" And he was like Jack, and he was very reluctant to say his family name. But long story short, we met a guy that used to live in Egypt, and he's Jewish. So you get to a place that actually has all these cultures to living together, and you just have it all always portrayed in this way that it's kind of a problem zone when it's actually not.
Yeah, My dad's best friend was born in Palestine in Jerusalem. Unfortunately, he passed a few years ago, and he
sorry about that.
Thanks. He always used to comment as well about, and he was Armenian, but he always used to comment on how the people just actually, if you left this area to the people, there would be no problem.
Definitely.
I have Palestinian friends as well. They always said that the Palestinians used to really like working for Jewish companies and Jewish people because they knew where they stood. They had no problems. And he also reiterated again that left to the people, there would be no problems. And this is unfortunately the kinds of narrative that we don't hear, as you say, enough of in the Western press. And this is why one of the many reasons why I am so not just disappointed, more than that. It triggers me beyond belief when the Western press simply represents all of the Middle East like some huge battlefield where everybody's constantly trying to get one over on the other one, and one religion is doing more to destroy another and so on. That's not how the people are. That's not how the people have been. And one of the reasons why that's the case is because, unfortunately, looking at the location, geographical location of so many of these nations over the last 1,000, 2,000 years, they have seen so many different people come and go. If it's Alexander the Great, or if it's the Persians, or if it's some other group, or the Crusaders, people have always come through. And what have they brought with them? War. But if these areas had been left to themselves, clearly they always had. There were trade disputes, and there may have been battles here and there. I'm not saying that you know, it's never happened. It would never have happened. But in the way that we see it now, in the way that it's described and characterized now, it's completely false, and that's disappointing.
Definitely, definitely. Moreover, I mean, back in the day, you definitely maybe had disagreements or fights or some type of, let's call it war, but it was a tribal war. And even in a tribal war, there was rules. There was always the big, or the head of this tribe can speak to the head of this tribe, and they can solve it over a cup of coffee. You know, that's how tribal things works, and it's more or less. But it was never about killing the people. It was never about destroying people's reputation or people's religion or people's beliefs. It was never about that. It was just probably maybe fighting over land or fighting over dignity, but it was never about hurting people. Whereas today, I mean, yeah, it looks very different. It's very sad what's happening today, for example, in Iran. And I keep on seeing also this huge portrayal of Iran as the ultimate horror or the ultimate evil in the area. When I'm not gonna say, when Iran is actually like also a country, I got to find out that Iran is actually the oldest country as of today. If you go back into the history, you have the oldest city is probably Damascus in Syria, but then the oldest country that we have today is Iran. And it's just a shame to see how the culture is portrayed and how wars are starting out of basically thin air. And Iraq is also a country with a lot of history all wiped out. I mean, there is nothing. I mean, the amount of heritage that was destroyed there through war, there's nothing more to see. I don't know how far is it, like if there's anything maybe salvageable, but in general, a lot of history has been also destroyed and is still going through this. I'm happy and I'm glad that at least my country is kind of going, like it was always kind of peaceful and it was always safe, and I hope it stays like that. But still, I have family in Jordan, kind of, although Jordan is not actually involved in any war, but I have my sister and my nephew and my niece sending me videos of the rockets flying through the sky, which is not a scene you'd like to for kids to grow up in. And then you wonder 10, 20 years ago, why is this generation aggressive, or why is this generation maybe distorted? I mean, we're growing up in very different conditions to the European conditions. I come to Europe and I get preached about European values and about safety and about human rights, whereas I always find this, it's a one-sided conversation. It feels like, sure, these values exist, but they exist within Europe. You go outside of Europe and we, and the way how things go here is like, we, it's not that we don't care what happens there. We do not feel connected to the people there, so we, it doesn't matter that much. And so always when it comes to human rights, I feel this hypocrisy in the conversation that, yeah, this is true, but this is true in Europe, you know? And for the Middle East, it's already a war zone. Well, what are we going to do anyway? No, it's not a war zone. It's not already like that. It was never like that. Go back to the history. Sure, over the last 80 years, maybe it had a lot of trouble, but that is for a reason, and that is because oil is in the Middle East. Before that, we actually lived more or less in peace. Yeah, but also there is reasons for that. We share a language, we share a culture, and we share a religion, the majority, and that makes it kind of easy. But again, this is not portrayed in Western media this way at all.
No, it's not. And unfortunately, if people really want to go and find out about the different histories, the different ways in which cultures have emerged over time, the way the nations in the Middle East have emerged, the way these borders were created, the way that the interactions between East and West came about, people would have to do so much reading. And unfortunately, it's far easier for them to simply listen to modern, unfortunately, in many ways, prejudiced propaganda and just simply believe what they see today without having any need to reflect upon what used to be. And as lazy as that is, I mean, you and I, we've spoken many times about work. We've spoken many times about how modern life simply just doesn't give people time to be able to scratch their heads sometimes and make sense of their own lives. So without trying to justify in any way right-wing extremists, traditionalists, ultra-conservatives, and so on. But I understand an element of laziness. However, what I don't understand is hatred. If I feel myself having or developing a dislike for someone or a culture, then I have to take a time out, and I have to reflect, and I have to go and learn. Because if this situation has provoked such an intense emotion within me, I cannot simply allow that emotion to develop on the basis of second, third, and fourth hand information. I have to go and read about it. I have to go and understand what is the basis of my issues with these individuals. And then once I have found out what the history is, and if I still feel that way, fair enough. For example, the Ottomans, yeah? What the Ottomans did to the Armenians, but on top of that, what the Ottomans did to almost every single nation which they overruled.
Jordan included, by the way.
Indeed, they ruled over, indeed, Jordan too, Syria, you know, Lebanon, and all of these areas, the things that they did, hateful. So do I have a right to hate the Ottomans? I believe I do, but I know a bit about that. Whereas other people, they have zero concept whatsoever about the Middle East, not even about Islam. They have zero concept, but they have this, it's so easy for them to be prejudiced against them because that's all they've been told to do.
And in these conversations, you have to wonder, where does this come from? What's creating this? What's the driver for this? And I always believe in this ancient war strategy saying, which says divide and conquer. And this is what has always happened. So you have a scenario between India and Pakistan where an English guy comes, draws the border between them, and it was actually a one country. They were like, okay, we move all the Muslims here, all the rest up there, And then they always do the same thing, which is somewhere along the line, they give one part wrongly to the other. And then, you know, a decade conflict, or like more than a decade, a century long conflict kind of begins and starts. And then, yeah, I mean, this, it's the same scenario happening over and over again. Unfortunately, history is also written by the winner, and that kind of gets to dictate, unfortunately, how the things will be read. And just like you said, laziness, I do understand. But having prejudice is, yeah, I do not understand. You get to be like, you get to be mad, for example, in your example about the Ottomans, but you cannot blame every Turkish person today you see about what happened, because they do not have anything to do with it. And
absolutely not. In fact, I'm always very, very, very attentive in the way that I communicate, and you know that I'm like that generally.
I know.
Whenever I refer to these kinds of scenarios, I always refer to governments and government policy. I have no problem with individual people, unless, of course, they are genocide deniers, or unless, of course, they are fueled by hatred, in which case I draw a line. However, if we're engaging in a normal conversation, you know, I respect all these cultures, but I cannot respect any government whose policy is based on destroying another culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. And maybe I could take a good takeaway from what you said, which is, I mean, this war maybe... Not maybe. I know that there's a lot of Armenians that came to Jordan.
Mm.
They brought also the Armenian culture with them. They brought the Armenian sujuk also with them. And a lot of, yeah. And also some Armenian names. So in like we do have this minority. And again, unlike maybe in Europe, we do like them. And we do not only like them, we do cherish them. Like they get to live their culture in Jordan also. Mm-hmm. You see the Chechen dance also all over Jordan, and Chechen science, because they also came at some point from a certain struggle. And you know, everyone is just living in some sort of harmony. There are problems. I'm not saying that the culture is perfect. It's not. It has its mistakes, like every other culture. However, there is this unity. It feels like a we. It's not like a I and you and, you know, we. But we. And this is kind of something that a bit fails in Europe. And you see it. You see it in how Germany has, I don't know how to say this very softly or in the best way possible, but you see how that there is a segregation maybe in the culturally. You see that the second generation Arabs and Turks, they do have their own communities here, maybe because the value system is not the same. I do understand that. However, those people are born here, they grew up here, they speak this language as their mother tongue. However, they never feel the right, or they never feel like they're at home. And this is something that still 10 years later sometimes actually surprises me. I met with an ex colleague a while, like a few days ago, who used to work at the same company, and he is exactly one of those people. He was born here, he grew up here, but he said this. He was like, I this is not my country. This is the I would rather go serve to my home country, where the country of his parents came from, but he doesn't feel this feeling towards Germany. And this happens way too often, and we have to ask ourselves why is this. I mean, not me, maybe Europeans, but it's a legitimate question.
Definitely. And in fact, we also wanted to talk about that, because we wanted to talk about how you've experienced integration within Germany. I was born of immigrants. I was born in London, but my parents were immigrants, so I was born British. Then I moved to Italy, so I was an immigrant in Italy, and then I moved to Berlin, and now I'm an immigrant in Germany. So I can see different perspectives in all of these situations. And I feel in the three realities where I have existed directly, Britain, Italy, and Germany, I can say that integration as a policy either has failed dramatically or was never really seriously considered.
Okay. Here is the thing when it comes to this subject. A little background story. For people who do not know this, the Middle Eastern culture or maybe the Muslim culture is very, very different to the way things are get done in Europe. And in general, you don't even need integration. Like I know many Arabs that went to Brazil and Latin America and Chile. They didn't need integration there. Why? Because the cultures, I don't want to say harmonize together, but work together to some point. However, you get, and let's take Germany here as an example. Here you get to a culture that is seriously different in every way, shape, or form. And so I am not a big fan of the word integration because I think it sounds like a person needs to study something to be able to deal with human beings, which is not the scenario or how things should be. Mm-hmm. However, there is an actual need because I really believe there's like huge differences between both cultures. Having said that, my experience was a bit tougher than the usual, I would say, because I was very young, 18-year-old, and it just felt that the whole value system that you base your life on is kind of completely different. The way we look at stuff was completely different. So there was this need of someone explaining me why things are being handled or being done the way they are in Europe. However, now moving to the point of integration, has it worked really? I don't think it's more integration. I think it's more, okay, we have people coming here. How do we get them to be, I don't want to say successful, but I would say functional. So that's what integration, at least the way Germany looks at integration is. It's just, we have a million people coming here. Okay, how can we get the best out of them? We need some sort of integration course, which is more or less them getting to know the language, them understanding how we do stuff here, and then them abiding by these rules. It's not a, we work together. It's more of a, I saved your ass from war, and then you have to now play by my rules. And that's, I think, what is happening here. It's coded in a word, which is beautiful, integration. However, when you go down to it, it is just like I explained. It's
definitely, because I took the same tests that all people have to take when they wish to go through the process of becoming a German citizen. Einbürgerungstest, and so I did this, and a lot of the questions for me were just silly because this is stuff that basically I grew up with in the UK. So it's very much, as you say, there's a European person's perspective represented within all of the material that you have to look at. I'm a critic of integration. I think integration is exactly as you say, a two-sided deal. I think that the host nation has, of course, its laws, it has its principles, and it should, in my opinion, correctly enforce all of those things and should encourage people to learn and follow those laws. If people commit crimes, it doesn't matter where they're from, they should be treated in exactly the same way because that's what the laws of the country are. But with regards to facilitating that process of how does a person join within the fabric of society without losing their identity, without forcing them to sacrifice their own principles and beliefs, respecting all of those differences, and at the same time giving them opportunities to thrive and succeed, I think that is fundamental within the process of integration. This is like the oldest capitalist system, isn't it? You take a bit, but you have to give a bit. Yeah. You always have to have that kind of a deal. And I feel, as you say, the deal that is currently on the table is extremely one-sided, especially to the poor people who come. If you turn up to Germany and it's quite clear and you've got a bucket load of cash in the bank, then obviously a lot of things are much easier for you. You don't have to worry about that. But most people, unfortunately, they don't arrive in Germany with that kind of cash. And so therefore, they've got to go through the more difficult process. It's a very challenging situation, and it's not designed to succeed. And that, I feel, is also what you're talking about when you said before, divide and conquer. It seems as though they want there to be failure at home so that they can justify their aggressions abroad.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Zach, my father says this about politics. He says that politics is the art of possible. What can you make possible? And it's how politicians, they want to achieve a certain goal. So they create a problem with which the solution is their goal. and it's like that. However, again, to some point, you cannot blame Germany because they are trying to do it correctly, or they are trying to learn from their mistakes, the one that they did when they got this huge wave of what they call it in German, Gastarbeiter, or guest workers, and they never integrated them. So there's a bit of anger towards this still 50, 60, 70 years after. And I think they tried to kind of learn from their mistakes. However, it was, just like you said, it was done in a very German way. It didn't take into perspective how those people who came here, what would they think? How could we draw the most benefit out of this for both sides? It was more of a system that created that kind of gets people more or less, yeah, this is the beginning of the line for you to get integrated with the fabric of society. So here's the beginning of the line. You can continue the road by yourself. And in general, let me be clear about this. I don't think there's always this idea or perspective that Europe is racist, maybe, or maybe Germany is racist. I want to say that in my humble opinion, Germany is not more racist than any other country. It's like the usual stereotypical kind of, yeah, this and that. But I wouldn't say that Germany, I've been met and welcomed by incredible people here who were actually really, really friendly. And I would say they opened their arms to a person that is very different. And when you think about fear from immigrants, it's not fear from immigrants. This stems from ignorance, or just actually not knowing what the other person is about. And so this integration happens both ways. And I would say in general, Germany was hard to get along with the rules. However, once you have achieved that leap, once you get to know the rules, once you get to the point where you're functioning, I wouldn't say like world after that or life is comfortable, it's nice, it's you get along good after that. However, there is some work that needs to be done at the beginning, and it's not easy on both sides. You have a country that's hosting people and giving those people their needs, their very like desired needs, especially for people who came from troubled zones. Those are people who are also traumatized. Those are people who are carrying a lot of weight with them, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's what they lost, whether it's how their life looking. So you have people who are not easy to like work with. And you have also a country which is also trying to do the most for them. So in general, all in all, it's not a bad scenario. As a humanity, we are functioning. However, there are some points that could be improved, definitely. Maybe just to lift up the conversation and maybe take it into a good place, because I don't just want to talk about the negative. There are also a lot of positives and a lot of things that Germany did in a good manner.
Yeah, no, I feel that. And obviously for me as well, having moved to Germany, I've from a very different reality, of course, I felt welcomed as well. In the same way, I've I've never felt any kind of animosity towards any group within Berlin or in any of the places that I have visited. As you say, there are prejudices, or there are groups of prejudiced people in Germany in the same way that there are those very same groups in other countries too. I am, however, very encouraged by Germany's constitution. I think the German constitution holds sacred within it a lot of the principles of human rights, which makes it very difficult for these kinds of groups to really push forward with their racist and prejudiced demands. And I'm really encouraged by that. And I think a lot of other countries, European and otherwise, would do well to accept and really try to put into practice human rights. And one of those countries that I would recommend that would try to do that would be the USA. So I think Germany, as you say, is very much at the lead of those Western countries, troubled in many ways with their problems, but is definitely better than many others. So yeah. And of course, I'm encouraged by it because it also gave me the opportunity to meet individuals such as yourself. And I do like, we always have very good conversations whenever we meet. I've enjoyed another one today. And I thank you, Amin, for finally finding the time and making yourself available. And I hope that this won't be the last time.
Thank you, Zach, for the invitation. And it was such a pleasure talking to you. And we have to do this soon again.
Definitely. Thanks a lot for your time. And I look forward to seeing you soon. All the best.
Thank you, Matt. Stay safe. Okay. Thank you.
Two. And mic.